dressage can be a drilling sport.
Right.
And I think a lot of times people forget that while they're doing dressage, the horse needs to enjoy it as well.
Welcome to the Equine Body Talks podcast. We'll be diving into the equine industry from the lens of a body worker, talking to other equine professionals and discussing scenarios around soft tissue work for all equine athletes. I'm Kim Krebs, your host. I've been working for over 2 decades in this industry as a loper, barn manager, and body worker. With the many horses I've worked with in all of these capacities, it has driven me to want to continually find out the why and the hows of equine biomechanics, health, and performance. To help these athletes achieve their best potential while limiting the wear and tear on their bodies. This podcast is dedicated to opening the conversation around equine wellness, diving deeper into the whole body approach for equine performance horses. We continue our discipline focus episodes today with a look at the sport of dressage. Dressage is often thought of as the quintessential epitome to horsemanship. The principles behind dressage are thousands of years old, and most equine disciplines take their foundation from dressage. The term dressage is from the French language and is commonly translated to mean training. Described by the FEI as the highest expression of horse training, this sport is one that takes years and years to work through and develop top-level athletes. In fact, if you are a true believer in lifelong pursuits, as a dressage enthusiast, you are always striving to achieve mastery. In modern dressage competitions, horse and rider will be asked to perform certain tests with a prescribed series of movements that are judged on a score of 0 to 10. 0 meaning it was not completed, and 10 being excellent. There are a wide range of levels, starting at the basic walk-trot level all the way up to the Grand Prix that you see in the Olympics. Within the test, horse and rider will have specific maneuvers to perform at very precise moments within the arena, as outlined by letters you see around the edges, indicating where transitions or maneuvers are to occur. For today's guest, we have a triple threat: a competitor, trainer and coach, and judge of the sport of dressage. Rebecca Cade operates RC Dressage, located just outside of Red Deer, Alberta. Rebecca, like most equestrian professionals, has had a lifelong passion and love for horses, as you will soon hear. Dressage became her sole focus when she was 15. Rebecca has had many notable accomplishments in her career, as well as horses she's worked with. Two very notable ones are her very special mare, Maya, whom she trained through the FEI level, and Quinlan FC, a Frisian gelding who is owned by Yannick Poot. In 2014, Quinlan received his sports predicate, and then in 2018, his elite predicate. He is the second Frisian in Canada to have his elite distinction, but the first Frisian to receive it fully trained here in Canada. She offers training and lessons from beginner to FEI level with focus on developing happy, confident, and well-rounded partnerships, either for the show ring or recreation. She takes personal pride in watching her students become better riders, successful competitors, and most of all, creating a bond with their horses. InHand has had the privilege of working with Rebecca and her clients for many years now, and her passion and dedication are hard to beat. Tina and I sat down with Rebecca to talk about the sport of dressage.
We'd love to learn more about the sport of dressage, and specifically, if you can start us through the basics, you know, what is a dressage horse, the levels that it would go through in order to reach its highest peak?
The form of dressage is for classical training, or training of your horse. So we're trying to develop an all-around athlete, whether it's just to do, say, training level, or people have aspirations of doing third level, fourth level, all the way up into the FEI levels. We're trying to make an all-around athlete the best that it can be for its well, conformation, ability. I think all those things have to be looked at, assessed when someone decides that they would like to do dressage. But I think that dressage is a fundamental sport into so many of the sports of horses.
Yeah, I think that's a super point, because even myself as a cutting horse competitor, the more that I have learned, and I actually did start with a little bit of dressage when I was 16, just very, very basic level, mm-hmm. but I still look at how my horses, especially since becoming a body worker, how my cutting horses can improve
right.
by doing some dressage, simple dressage work with them. Now, they're not always appreciative of it
no.
because it actually means they have to work a little bit harder.
I've had people come to me that were not dressage. They were not dressage riders. They were barrel racers, not so much cutters, but needing some different skills brought to their horse to encourage a more supple horse, because I'm sure that they could all, but all horses could benefit mm-hmm. from being more supple.
Absolutely.
For any of their disciplines.
Right. And I think you're a unique person to talk to, because not only are you a trainer of dressage, but you're a coach of dressage and you're a judge.
Yes.
So, you know, you can see the horse from a lot of different aspects, which I think makes your program different than a lot of other people that are out there, because you're not just focused on the human. You're not just focused on the ride or the horse,
right.
but you're looking at the team and how they're working together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like the hats are very different. As a rider, you assess the horse from the saddle. As a trainer, you're also assessing the horse from the saddle, but also from the ground as well. Like, I do a lot of ground work with all the horses that are in my program. I believe more so in that than side reins and draw reins and those types of things. I think a horse should be able to develop itself through a more their own natural way. If we can help to bring them more suppleness through their own body without us having to use things to tie them up to do that, definitely helps. And then as a judge, that's probably the most unique, because you're only given a certain amount of time to look at a horse, assess a horse, judge the horse, and then give an overall assessment of the horse in the completion of the test. So there's many different aspects that as a judge you can't think like a trainer, and you can think as a rider from experience, but you definitely have to just look at what you see in front of you and be able to very quickly go through the training scale of rhythm, relaxation, contact, straightness, impulsion, collection. Are those elements, based on the level of which you're judging, are they there for you to score? So,
and do you think that becoming a judge changed your coaching and definitely, training?
Definitely. I think that probably a lot of my clients get stuck in that sometimes, because I look at them when I'm coaching them and say, well, if you did that transition for me as a judge, I would give you a 4. Why would you do it and not want to have an 8? So let's be mindful of those things that we can do better in our daily training just by changing our mindset in how we ride.
Yeah, that's really neat.
Mm-hmm.
And in your program then, do you do a lot of work towards showing with your clients then? Or do you have a range of clients that some are going to show, some aren't?
So I have a range of clients for sure. I have ones that just would like to ride better themselves for their horse. They will never go to a show. They just want to be better horse people. I have some that they would like to show, but they just like to do local shows. They don't want a bunch of stress, but they still have to be good show people. And then I have some clients that obviously like to do the recognized show world. And so their programs are a little more, I don't want to say intense, but they're more structured to that direction, as opposed to the ones who don't feel like they would ever show.
Right.
There's less pressure, I guess.
Yeah, that's totally fair.
Mm-hmm.
So when you have such a wide range of riders, I'm assuming you also have a wide range of horse types yes. that you're working with.
Definitely.
Yeah.
We have all kinds here.
Yes.
You know, we have the little Appaloosas to the Frisians to the warm blood crosses to, well, anything. Anything can come to my program. If they're,
which you know, I think is really neat yeah. because there is a lot of trainers out there that they like one horse type mm-hmm. and they end up putting people on that horse type, whether it fits them or not, which I think is really unique about your program because you really do look at what the rider needs. Mm-hmm. And if they come to you with a horse, I've seen it time and time again, working for you for the last, I think, 10 years
yeah.
that, you know, you can take a horse and it could be a backyard horse and you could turn it into something with some top line and shape. So I really appreciate how you're able to look at each horse and each rider and see where that horse could get to in its potential.
Yeah. And I think it's important as a trainer and as a coach that you have to assess those types of things for the horse, but also the rider, someone who has a middle-aged horse that has just had a quite simple life, really. You bring it to me and say, well, now I'd like to do third level. Well, I'm going to say that that is not probably in the horse's best interest or the rider, but let's just see what we can do. We'll start and see where we end up. The horse will always tell us what its level of work can be.
Yeah.
If we take the time to listen,
yeah.
we can soon discover that some potentially could do more than we ever thought they could.
Right.
And some are okay the way they are.
Right.
And so are the riders.
And that's a great point to bring up. So what would you look at where a horse is telling you that it can't maybe do what the rider is asking it to do? What would just some of the things, because lots of times listeners are questioning themselves, like, you know, is my horse trying to talk to me or is he being bad? And I know you have a great eye for that. So what are some of your things that you...
Well, I think, again, you have to assess the situation or the level at which the horse is being trained at or ridden at. Some horses become disobedient because they're sore. They have poor saddle fit, but we don't have that here because we are all DK enthusiasts.
Yes.
And so, I mean, and I don't say that lightly because I've had a DK saddle on my horses for 15 years.
Yeah.
So their backs don't lie to me or to you guys.
Right.
That tells us exactly where those horses are in their level of work. But when horses run into certain hurdles, you do have to assess, are those hurdles training? Are they physical? Are we just in a place that we need to maybe work the horse through that? I think all those things come into play. That's where the knowledge of a coach trainer has to assess those types of... I don't think all horses are bad. Some are. But I think all horses are at some point going to try to tell you some level of where they're at.
Mm-hmm.
Physically, mentally.
Yeah, totally.
All those things. And I think you have to look at all of those things when horses run into situations.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. And you've built quite a good team around your clientele. I've noticed if a new client comes into you, you know, you introduce them to the people that you use. But the thing I really like about you is some of the programs that I go to, they just say, you're doing this. Whereas yeah. you're very good at explaining things to people. Tell us a little bit about the team that you've built and kind of why you've chosen some of the people.
Mm-hmm. So, as I mentioned, like DK saddles are... That's the only saddle I will ride in, so because I believe in their product wholeheartedly, and they're two great people. I chose Crystal Croach as my trainer because she's your whole package horse lady. You know, has lots of passion, loves the horses, and just has a desire to teach people. And I think we're fortunate to have somebody like that here. And obviously, you gals play a huge part in my team, because the horses that work in a regular training program need to be assessed by body workers, because we're trying to not avoid vet visits, but we're trying to prolong them, mm-hmm, or yeah, at least support, mm-hmm, the veterinary care that has to come. And I mean, I've now been involved with Chad, you know, Dr. Chad at Energy Equine, I don't know, 5 years, 6 years, somewhere in there.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's an extraordinary, extraordinary person, and an extraordinary vet as well. Like, the way he can assess a horse in minutes, mm-hmm, and just with such small things is quite amazing. So and I have local vets here too, and so yeah, I have a pretty great team.
Yeah, that's cool. And would you say that you would have the same success? Because you are running a fantastic program here with happy horses, happy ladies, you know, your clients, everybody's got a smile on their face. And that all, I think, comes down from the head of the ship, you know?
Absolutely,
it does. Yeah, yes, so I think that, you know, you've created that. And do you think that that would be the same if you didn't have, you know, all the things in place?
No, I like to think that where I've got to now has come from past experience in all aspects, that you need a great team with you to do what you would like to do. It has to just be like that. And it's a tough industry because there's so many people trying to do it, and they're successful. Everybody's successful in their own right. But for me, I want to develop happy horses with happy riders that are keen to learn. They learn from their horses through their education, and that they start to think as trainers a little bit to their own horse, not just as someone that rides their horse.
Right.
That they can hopefully develop the skills to also assess their own riding with their horse.
Right.
Well, yeah. I think you develop such a good feel in your riders,
yes,
as well as obviously having such great feel yourself. And as a body worker, it's so appreciated, because the feedback that you give us when we come, and the riders give us, the clients, the owners of the horses, when we come to work on the individuals, mm-hmm, you know, it's such great feedback to know what exactly is happening in the rides, where you're feeling the horse's shortcomings are coming from. And especially because you do have such a large range of horses, mm-hmm, as you said, in terms of breeds, and they're all going to have their own limitations because, okay, of conformation and whatnot. But really understanding, mm-hmm, what's happening is so essential. So I think that feel and the communication that you have, as well, right, as what you instill in your owners to share with us, yeah, as well, is crucial.
Yeah, and I have great clients. Like, they are all on board with their horse's care and wellness, and that's half the battle right there. Yeah. When you have great people to work with,
yeah,
makes your job a little bit easier when you come to do it.
Right.
Yeah.
But I think it is unique that you are one of the few trainers that is actually talking to their clients about what's happening with their horse,
mm-hmm,
and not just saying, oh yeah, well, it doesn't turn left, well, I guess we'll get that eventually. You know, you're really trying to break it down.
Yeah.
And then that makes riders that are actually understanding what's happening with their own horse. And I think it creates more passion. Like, yeah, I think, mm-hmm, they get more excited about doing things. I'm thinking of one horse that came here as a, you know, a kind of a older paint guy, and, you know, was downhill and had no back tissue. And now, I mean, he's uphill and he's doing his job. And, you know, I don't think that's such a long road to remake, yeah, a horse like that, that without having you excited about every, right, step of the way, I think the clients would get really downtrodden, yeah, with it as well.
Yeah. Well, and it comes, I mean, those roads, they feel like they take forever, but they come in small increments, which that's where you guys play a big role too, because that can let us know maybe we got a little too excited over those 7 weeks and pushed the horse maybe a bit more than it needed, and we maybe needed to have some more walk breaks at those times. Like, those are crucial parts to a training program.
Right.
And a training of a horse. Because dressage can be a drilling sport.
Right.
And I think a lot of times people forget that while they're doing dressage, the horse needs to enjoy it as well.
Right. Yeah.
Right? And so it might mean that one day they do something really well, and the next day you are very surprised because they think they don't even know what you're asking them to do. And I think you have to be very compassionate to the horse in that aspect, because you want them to be, to remain willing to work with you.
Right.
Right. So that we don't encounter some things you can't foresee happening, but
right.
You're trying to not push the horse down a path of no return.
Yeah. Yes.
Because that can be, that's not a good right. place.
Yeah.
Too many horses end up there.
Yes, yeah. I agree. And I think you're one of the few FEI riders that I don't see in your barn. There's, you know, you don't see bigger bits, bigger spurs, draw reins, martingales, all of this, you know, all these things that are out there. You don't see that in this barn.
Pretty basic, gal.
Yeah. But is that because you're willing then, like just with what you just said there, that you're willing to allow those ebbs and flows so that the horse is continuing on a path?
Yeah. And I'm pretty committed to like groundwork, horsemanship, like not so much liberty. Like I don't know much about that, but the people that do it do a fantastic job, but there's a lot of things that you can work through in a horse from the ground, because the things you feel through a halter and a rope are most of the time the same things you feel within the bit,
right?
Or in the horse's back or in the horse's hind legs. They all tie together. And I mean, my first experience with like that type of work was, well, many years ago, probably 20. And I had taken my horse to Kent Williamson for some extra work. And he thought that I should ride the horse without a bridle, without a halter, and just a saddle. And I just thought that was the most craziest thing. Dressage riders do not do that. And I said, I remember saying to him, I am not doing that. Oh, you are. You really are going to do that. And I remember the feeling of complete nausea, thinking that I was going to get on this horse and do this. But I also remember how it felt to know that, oh, you can keep a horse with you enough without a halter or a bridle. I'm not saying I'm going to do that all the time, but you want to have a willing partner. So I truly believe that groundwork, working them like that, having ball, like their the balls out, cavalettis, stuff that interacts with the horse, noodle walls, all those types of things are great for a horse.
Yeah, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's take it back to you just a little bit. When did you start riding?
When I was 8, wanted to ride, and haven't looked back really.
And
I never had my own horse. Had to ride anybody's horse that wanted their horse ridden. So that's what I did. Mayo was actually my first horse that was mine. And up until then, I had ridden lots of people's horses. So I also think that gives me a lot of experience that way as well, that I had to ride anything.
Right.
If I wanted to ride, I just had to ride anything that was there. So,
and was it always in the English discipline? In
like I don't ride bareback. Like I'm not a bareback rider. I have to be in a saddle. So I was kind of spoiled that way. And I had private lessons, and that was my, I was fortunate that way. Didn't do any pony club, but had to learn as I went.
And was your family horse crazy too,
just
or how?
My mom.
Yeah. Okay.
Just my mom.
Yeah. So she was fanning the fires a little bit.
Oh yeah. Dad soon figured out that horses cost a lot of money, so he eliminated himself from that. So it's been my mom and I that have carried the torch for horses.
And tell us a little bit about your mom, because she is a staple at the barn.
Oh,
and
yes.
Definitely when you're showing, she's right at ringside.
Yeah.
And I think that also, just your mom's a very special woman. And I think it shows with your passion with your ladies that are around. So yeah. Tell us just a little bit about your mom.
Yeah, like she's obviously my biggest fan, but she's also been the biggest part of my success as a horse person, because yeah, like we didn't have a whole bunch of money to do horses. So we just did what we did, and my mom drove me where I needed to go, and that's how we made it happen. And then, you know, we were able to finally have a horse. And so then Mayo was such a interesting horse. She took us on many adventures. And so through Maya, I always say to people that I would know nothing had I not had that horse, because I met all the wonderful people in the horse world because of her, and all the connections I have were from a difficult horse, but in the end it all worked itself out, and yeah. We just ended up having a great horse. Yeah. And met great people too. And so yeah, mom is a huge part of that.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Where would you like to go if you know if you're going to continue to build your business? What would the next steps be in the world of dressage?
Well, I want to continue building what I have. Someday the dream would be to be in Florida, maybe for a winter or somewhere.
Yes.
As long as you take us.
Yeah, exactly.
We're really part of the team.
Yeah, you're part of the team, so you have to come. I mean, that would be the ultimate dream, but I'm also okay dreaming here as well. I would love to be back with an FEI horse of my own. Obviously, I've been fortunate to have clients with great horses that I've been able to continue stepping my way into those levels over the years. So that is my, just want to keep getting better, learning more. I mean, you're never done
no,
learning.
100%. So. 100%.
And can you maybe explain for those that don't really understand the level of dressage? So even saying FEI, you know, I think there's going to be some people listening that don't have a clue what that really means.
So like FEI, like stands for Federation Equestrian Internationale. So it is the governing body of the world of dressage, show jumping, 3-day eventing, driving, like anything at the international level. And those levels begin at Pre-St. George, and those are tests that everybody in the world who rides Pre-St. George rides that same test, all the way through to the Grand Prix Special that they ride at the Olympics. And then at the you start at the beginning at walk trot, and then you have training level, first level, second level, third level, fourth level, all consist of three varying tests within those levels. So yeah, you kind of have to start at the bottom and work your way to the very long top.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's a never-ending process.
It is never-ending, yeah.
It is, and you know, like, not every horse gets to the FEI level, and that's okay. Yeah. The ones that do they're special in their own, in their very own way, because it's a lot of work to get there, and a lot of physical ability and athleticism, but most of all they mentally have to be willing to work like that.
Yeah.
You know, so they're special.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And as a judge then, what would you say would be one of the top things that is going wrong for people? Not even just from level to level, but just that you see out there that you'd really like to bring to people's attention to start to look at.
So I would say that, well, there's a few things, but people who show need a coach. They need a good coach. They need someone who's going to take the time to explain to them why they're doing what they're doing at the level they want to do, what the requirements of those levels are, and that just because your horse can do a serpentine at the canter and not change its leads doesn't mean it's ready for second level. There's a degree of progression in the self-carriage that goes on through the horse. Suppleness, like all those things come into effect as you make your way through the levels. And I think for me, from what I see when I'm judging, is that at the lower levels, there seems to be a lack of education in riders, in their understanding of what is required. I always say that judges don't want to give bad marks. It's hard work. That's hard work, giving bad marks, because you don't want to do that. It's so much easier to give sevens, eights, nines, because you're just enjoying the test that you're seeing in front of you. That's what it's about.
Yeah.
I said, but going back to those lower levels, people's understanding, like, transitions matter, center lines, corners, being prepared, not feeling stressed. All those things are important. So your coach, your daily coach, needs to be a part of that process if you want to show. Because I think a lot of people I just don't think they feel ready enough to do it.
Right.
They see the requirements in the test. Yeah, my horse does that every day.
Right.
But can it do it for 6.5 minutes or however long the test? Can it do it all at one time for that amount of time?
Right, and string it together. And yeah, good point.
Because horses have strong points and they have weaker points, which tests always reveal.
Yeah.
But when the horse is truly ready, 6, 5, 7, 8, those are just easy to give.
Right.
Well, and I think the other point that comes to mind when you're talking about this is how fluid it all needs to be too, for that 6.5 minutes.
Very harmonious.
So it's easy for people to look at the test and say, oh, my horse walks, trots, and canters, no problem.
Right.
But it's stringing those simple maneuvers together so that it is such a fluid movement.
And where people also have to look is that at the bottom of a test, through walk, trot, and fourth level, there are 5 other boxes at the bottom that the judge has to assess your marks. And so sometimes, like, a person may be upset that they were given a 5, that they may have received a 7 for their position and seat, but only a 5 for their effectiveness of the aids. Well, when you look through the test, if you didn't get anything above a 6 or even a 6.5, and you had some 4s and some 5s in there, that's reflective of your communication to the horse. It obviously had some communication issues through the test. You might have looked beautiful, but the communication part was being affected, right, which then all also affects the gates, the impulsion, the submission marks that come in at the bottom.
Right.
So the bottom marks are just tying the test together.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, and I think that's a really good point that I think a lot of people don't look at. They look to see if they can tick off the boxes, like you had said, Kim, and they can do the individual movements, but can it come together cohesively? And then, like you're saying, does the collective marks at the end, can you score well on those because you were able to execute everything smootly?
Right. And I think that that's where judges struggle, like with people thinking that judges don't like them, or they didn't like their horse, or they didn't like how they rode, or there's lots of things that people might think. But as a whole, a judge is there to assess your training, your daily training. So it's a hard thing to take and look at a test and say, well, hey, I have some places I need to get to work. And that's what that's for. I said, and you know, I always say to people, like, if you want 70 or 75 at a show, you better be riding at like 80 or 90 when you're riding at home.
Right.
Yeah.
Because the factors start to come in when you take your horse to a show. Yes. Oh, it's whinnying, and oh, it's spooking, and oh, it never does that, and oh, it's not eating, and oh, you know, all those things come into effect. You need to be like, but I'm riding at 80 to 90, 100% at home. So that horse will hopefully.
Right.
Right.
Bring you a 70, maybe.
Right.
Maybe.
Still maybe.
Right.
So Rebecca, if people want to get a hold of you, how do they find you and RC Dressage?
So you can pretty much find me most days of the week, all hours of the day, at Burnt Leg Stables in just outside of Red Deer. It's a family-owned facility that I've been here for, 20 years. Will be my 20th anniversary on May something of this year.
Right on.
That I have been here, so.
Excellent.
Yes.
And does RC have social media or anything that they could check out if they're not from Alberta?
There's a Facebook page, RC Dressage.
As you heard through our conversation, dressage is a sport for all levels of horse and rider. Whether it's to develop and improve athletes for other equine sports, or if it's to rise through the levels of competition in dressage itself. This sport is a solid base for any discipline. As Rebecca mentioned, however, it can be a drilling sport for the horse. As the levels increase and the maneuvers require more athleticism, we see a higher level of engagement, collection, straightness, impulsion, and contact, along with the rhythm and relaxation needed for the fluidity of movement. This all means that horses that are working within the sport can see a variety of soft tissue and body soreness problems while they are progressing, but also if they have imbalances causing them to compensate. Rebecca mentioned how crucial she finds the wellness team that surrounds her clients and their horses, a critical factor for any discipline, and especially so for the higher level of execution and precision needed in upper-level dressage horses. As a body worker, if you are working with dressage horses, we always want to ensure we have that open line of communication with our clients about what level the horse is at, what are the goals the client is wanting to achieve, and in what time frame are they wanting to do that. It takes years to develop dressage horses, and a good trainer will take their clients and horses through the steps, building on the last. Truly understanding the symmetry in the horse's body is extremely critical to gain the straightness these athletes need to compete with. Depending on their level and intensity of training, a dressage horse has the potential to have soft tissue issues throughout the body at any given time. As a horse progresses through the sport, they will develop moves from simple transitions to lateral work and into piaf and passage. Each horse will present differently and, of course, requires an in-depth assessment. However, in general, particular attention should be paid to the core tissue, the muscles of impulsion and collection, and the neck and jaw region due to the rigors of maneuvers required. For myself, working with dressage horses is inspiring, especially within Rebecca's program. The basics of proper dressage can change an inverted, laterally unstable horse into an athlete with strength and stamina. Over the years, I've been a body worker for some of her clients. I have seen continued progress and, in some cases, huge development changes. It's beyond rewarding to have her clients who take to heart the exercises and programs we put together and implement them regularly so that at each appointment we see improvements. If you are interested in learning more about Rebecca or the sport of dressage, be sure to connect with her on her Facebook page at RC Dressage.
Thank you for listening to the episode. I appreciate each rating and review you can give to help grow this podcast and ask that you please share it on social media and with your friends. Reach out to the social media pages on Facebook and Instagram under Equine Body Talks to know about upcoming episodes and to connect with me if you have areas you'd like to have discussed or guests you'd like to listen to. All of our episodes can be found on my website at KrebsEquine.com and our Equine Body Talks YouTube channel. Remember to always be an advocate for your horse and not be afraid to open the conversation around your horse's wellness team.